Celine Kurka, and I cordially welcome you to my podcast, Neue Musik Leben. I have studied classical singing, and I sing nowadays lots of contemporary and experimental music. If you would like to know more about me or find out where I'm singing concerts and perform, please look at my website, www.irenekurka.de. And yeah, you could also subscribe to my monthly newsletter. In this podcast, I talk around themes all around contemporary and experimental music. I share with you the behind the scenes, the insider knowledge, and most important, I bring you the human beings out of this world closer to you. And yes, I thank you very much for all your contributions, ideas, and feedbacks you sent me, and also particularly that you enjoyed my first solo episode so much. My review, my learnings from 24. Thank you so much. This was a new big step for me because, I've done only interviews with the English language, and now I've done my first solo episode, and it really motivates me to give you more of this kind. And I'm already planning another English solo episode for you. I'm cooperating with the NMZ, Neue Musikzeitung, one of the most important German music papers, and you can also find them online. They're in print and online, and they're very important about anything that's going on in the music life, and also the politics that are going on, and whatever about funding, anything, all you find in Neue Musikzeitung. In today's episode, I talk with the wonderful composer Alena Canovas Paris. And yes, she is from Spain, and we will talk about a lot today. So this is the interview with Alena Canovas Paris. Enjoy. Hello, Alena Canovas Paris. I cordially welcome you into my podcast, Neue Musik Leben.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
And I'm really excited to have you here. I mean, we already have encountered each other before and had great talks, and I really thought I have to interview this woman, this composer. And I'm also very lucky because we don't live too far away from each other, at least right now we do. And so you came over and I can have a real interview with you in person. That's great.
Yes, it feels amazing.
That's cool. So I would like to know first, how did you find your way into this weird thing we're all doing, the new and experimental music?
So I grew up in a little town, in like more or less close to Barcelona. And the thing is that I always listened to, like at home there was a lot of music always sounding. And it was a mix between classical music from all the different authors and times, and at some point when I started doing my own music, it already sounded a mix with this kind of very, very mixed references, like a bit of Bach, a bit of Stravinsky, and a bit of Frank Zappa. And at some point I just decided I want to learn more how to compose and how to express myself in music. And well, it's framed into this name, experimental classical music, whatever, but I don't know if that matters so much to me. For me, it's more this eternal search, let's say. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And you're a pianist as well, as I know. So when did you also study playing the piano, or you went right into study of composition?
Like, I think the first thing I really did was singing. I started singing in the choir of my school, and then I asked my parents to also learn piano. And this I did more or less until I was 17, but I think I wrote my first pieces when I was 15, 16, something like that. And at that point, I knew already I wanted to be a musician, but I knew I didn't want to be a pianist. So my bachelor's, like when I stepped into university, I studied directly composition. And I have to say, playing the piano was something that I didn't enjoy much. Also, I had to, of course, keep playing the piano when I was in uni. but it was not my favorite activity. And now I really enjoy playing, paradoxically.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Now that it's a hobby, I really enjoy it. But yes, I come, of course, from piano and singing. I also played the organ for a couple of years.
Wow.
Yes.
But I think piano is a very helpful instrument because you can play all the harmonies and the chords, and it's not just
exactly
a melody instrument.
Exactly.
And because I also basically come from the piano, that was the first like music lesson I had, even though I was always singing in a very good choir and then also performed at the Nuremberg Opera House with children roles. But back then, nobody would teach me, even when I was then like kind of auditioning or singing for a voice teacher when I was 14, 15. It was in a time where they were like, you're very talented, but we don't want to hurt your voice. They were not, they didn't know how to work with like young voices. And they said, come back when you're whatever, 17, 19. And that has changed completely. So I was just singing in this choir and I was studying piano a lot. And I feel now when I also study my repertoire, it helps me because I'm also a very holistic person that I want to know what's going on and not just knowing what my voice is doing. And I can imagine that it is also helpful for composing.
Of course, it's a wonderful tool. And I think I really didn't enjoy the idea of being a pianist. I had a lot of problems, like physical problems playing the piano.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I injured my little finger of the right hand when I was 14. And it keeps not working properly, let's say. So that was also a bit involved. I have to say I enjoyed much more playing the organ on that time when I was a teenager. Really like the space and the resonance and the whole thing with the colors and the timbre was really magical. And also very somehow like strange to keep, you know, practicing in churches by myself, being 14, 15 years old. But now I really enjoy it. And of course, it's, as I said, it's a wonderful tool for composing. But there's also endless amazing repertoire for piano. So it's also fun to sometimes just sit and read new pieces.
Wow.
Yes.
And I think also with the singing, I also like composers and I've worked with some of them who then kind of can demonstrate what they want me to do. And I mean, it's not that they have to sing it whatever the most perfect way or so, but I can feel the spirit much more. And I often know also when they can do that, that it's not just the composition that is whatever constructed in their head, but they really tried it out. And you can also feel it as a performer that somehow it clicks in more than whatever heady stuff some people
Completely. I think the voice is a very particular instrument and you can really notice if the composer sings herself in the writing, right? It has like a lot of, let's say, special things to see. And singing is something that I really enjoy. And I also kept doing all these years, actually. I think there wasn't a year of my life that I didn't sing somehow. And yeah, it's something amazing also that helped me a lot composing.
I can totally understand it. And I mean, you also, this is a little side note, you also have a festival which is about song and art, song and singing, the Lied Garden.
Exactly.
And that's, I mean, that fits so perfectly then.
The Avantgarde, exactly. It's really, really special. We also connect a lot with voice, right? And we always try to do it in different ways, but yes. It's voice is very, very present in my life.
This is exciting. And the other thing we just had, because we spent some time with each other and I cooked a lunch for you. And we were talking about cooking as well.
Yes.
And how to be either intuitive or some people cook with recipes and how we also, I mean, I'm just a singer and an interpreter, but how there are also similarities or parallel things between composing and cooking. And I was like, this is so cool.
Yes, wonderful lunch you cooked, by the way. And of course, we were having this conversation about if we cook following a recipe or intuition. And I have to say, for me, it's pure intuition also, like in composing.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes.
So you can watch also how you cook or don't cook. So what are the qualities you most appreciate in musicians and the interpreters of your work?
Oh, wow, such a nice question. I think, of course, like, it's a bit like common sense, but I'm going to say it anyway. I appreciate to work in an environment where I feel there is respect and there is curiosity also. There is like this space to discover things together. And I always say to myself, when I compose or when I finish a score, I still have questions normally about that score I already finished. So I like when I feel the first rehearsal with this new performer is also a space where I can fail, you know? Mm. And to that is from a point of curiosity of both of us, me from the writing aspect and her or him from the performance aspect, a space where we can discover something together, so that pressure of knowing anything or having everything already decided is away. That's for me like really important. This like more like playful aspect and yeah, and this curiosity to discover new things that comes together most times also, I think, with enthusiasm, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. With like this kind of simply the happiness and this enthusiasm of discovering something together that is really special, I believe, from performing new music.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, it's a great approach because I think it underlies a lot of a trust also. I mean, mm-hmm, you trust the performer and the performer trusts you, and that you really also meet like on the same height, and it's not like in the real old days or whatever, the composer was the dictator and yes, we just had to follow. And I also like it so much that it has changed and that we really cooperate or even co-create together. And that's really fun.
Completely. And I mean, I keep having very funny moments about this. In summer, I was rehearsing an opera in Spain, and we had one, let's say, orchestra rehearsal on one afternoon, which was only with the instrumental players, the conductor and me. And then at some point I was like stuck in a couple of bars, and I turned to the conductor and to the musicians and said, I don't know, what do you think, option A or option B is better? And all of them were looking at me with surprise, just like, girl, deal with it, you are the composer, you know? Because there's still this attitude. Although I really loved this work together, of course, with these musicians and conductor. But it was funny that they took this moment with such a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
As if I believe I cannot be sure of every millisecond that I write. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot that is in constant change, you know? But it's interesting how still sometimes the stereotype of hyper-intellectual control freaks, mm-hmm, still, mm-hmm, remains, mm-hmm, in composers nowadays. Even, yeah, in 2024.
Yeah, okay. Well, I remember a piece I have done a long time ago with a composer, a woman composer I really, really like. And we worked many projects together. And then there was this one time we kind of did a one-woman opera for 50 minutes, and we had different parts. And there was one part she wrote something like, great, and I mean, it was just me, so there were no instrument or anything, it was just me. And this part was written in a way that I said, you know, if I can sing this with my score, like in a concert, it's no problem at all. But mm-hmm, if I have to memorize this, I can do this until the performance date, but then I cannot learn any of the other, whatever, 40 mm, minutes. And I said, we have to do something about it. And then she changed it, or she gave me certain patterns that I could play mm, around. And it worked very fine in the end. And I was so glad that she also was open and practical, that she said, I really understand your problem. I mean, at some point, no, the time is over. And she found a way that made both of us happy. And mm, that was really great. And the other thing we had, there was a section she already planned in the beginning that was kind of improvised. And it really, we found it like the day before the performance. It was really interesting that somehow it did not show up yet. And we were like almost like freaking out. Can we leave this part in, or have to totally take it out. And the funny thing was also, in the end, it was the best part of the show. The thing that we kind of created last
amazing.
Moment.
Like,
So, how is your surroundings? How do your friends, family, colleagues, or audience react to the kind of music you make? And how do you deal with their reactions?
So, of course, I have a lot of musician friends and a lot of composer friends. For me, I stopped studying, or let's say I did a break of studies in 2022, so it's 2 years from now, more or less. And I think these encounters with composer friends are still very important for me, because they are approaching sometimes something like what happened in the lessons, like this kind of more analytical hearing. And I'm, by having a lot of composer friends, mostly in Cologne, it's also very special, because everybody does something completely different, I feel. So it's really nice that it's not, you know, like a small aesthetic wall, but that we are all very, very particular, I believe. These conversations are always very important to me. But I also have a lot of friends, non-musicians, and my family in Spain, they are also not musicians. And sometimes I feel this kind of very pure feedback that they give is really, really important for me, because it connects differently. And finally, I feel I want to write music for all kind of audiences, like not only for people that have a background in new music. So it's really, really, really special. Like, and it's very interesting, because I feel when I ask a non-musician friend or member of the audience to speak out, the first thing that comes is like, oh no, but I don't have any idea about it. Like, oh, but I don't have the knowledge. And this is still so present, right? Although I think we are really not expecting that anymore. I don't know how it's for you.
No, not at all. I mean, I also think, but obviously it's for someone who's trained in music easier, because when I go to performances, or even when I watch a classical opera that I have not seen on stage before, I even often don't read anything about it before, because I just want to experience it, and then whatever I have my thoughts and my experience, and then maybe I read afterwards whatever the book the theater made, which great dramaturgs have written something, or I look up my whatever opera guides I have. And then and search, I'm like, oh, okay, this is why I perceived it like this. But for some reason, if you don't have this knowledge, you've a lot of people feel insecure, even though, as you say, we don't expect it. Because I think any experience you have, if it's, I don't know, exciting, sad, or you don't like it, it's an experience and it can be fine. And a colleague of mine also said, you know, when you go into whatever building that is maybe interesting, or even great architecture, you just enjoy the building. I mean, you also don't sit there, oh well, how is this calculated or something.
Exactly, yeah.
And this is for some reason people try to do this in music. And I mean, you're also touching this point, how do we bring the music, because I'm such a great fan of our music, to other audiences, to new audiences. And I think you also do probably great work with the Avant Garden. I'm sure you bring there people who maybe never had to do with new music, unless they come every time you do this thing.
Well, we have actually in Avant Garden a couple of like a small group of like Stammkunden that are there every year. And it's funny, because they say sometimes, and this is something I hear also a lot from my music, even though I've never programmed my music in the festival, this typical sentence of, oh, I was scared it would sound horrible, or it would sound blah, blah, blah. And actually, it was nice. Like, this kind of surprise. I think there's still a lot of audience approaching new music with this kind of distance. Like, if it would be something that would kind of cause a terrible experience or whatever, I don't know. And this comes very, very, very often after Avant Garden. And yes, I try as artistic director of our small festival as much as possible to build a program with music that establishes kind of a conversation with the place, because of course Avantgarden is a festival happening also in the open space. It's not a concert hall. We play in gardens and we play in the streets of a small town that has nothing to do with music, although the name of the of the town has the word song in it, because I think it's really enriching. And I believe that's what's interesting for me, you know, not to do music or to sing music for a small amount of people, but to try to do it as open as possible and diverse as possible too.
Yeah, this place is very cute. I've never been to your festival yet, but I've walked around this little city, and around there's this forest and there's a tower you can go up.
And a castle, yes. Yeah, it's a very special town.
So I think we couldn't go into the castle when I was there. I could just get into the garden before, but it was closed. And it's very, very special to go there. And I think it's so amazing that you do music there, new music. And it's great. It's really great. And so we are here to find new audiences, and that's also why I personally do this podcast. You come from Barcelona, and it is Catalonia within Spain. And what's the difference in Barcelona or in this area compared to Germany? I mean, you have been living now quite a while in Cologne, you studied here, and how is Germany compared to this country music wise?
Well, they are really, really different countries, although I feel in this time Spain has changed for the good a lot. So the thing is that, there's much more contemporary music, and the scene is much bigger and much more diverse in Germany, I feel. It's funny because I come from a town, from Barcelona, but I studied in Zaragoza, which is actually a city between Barcelona and Madrid. And let's say, I started to be a musician when I was studying this bachelor's in Zaragoza. So for 5 years, I got to know a lot the scene of more, let's say, the west of Spain, like more. And then now, I'm based in Cologne since 7 years already. And I recently started also working again in Spain, and I got to meet a bit more the scene in Barcelona. Just as a side note, very long side note. But as I said, new music is much less programmed in Spain. And it's interesting because normally Spain programs a lot composers from Spain, so less from other parts of the world. And for me, it was a huge surprise when I came to Cologne to study my master's. I was in a tiny bit of a crisis, let's say. And I was wondering if this cold composition was what I wanted to do. And this had a lot to do with what I saw in Spain. So basically, my image of contemporary music in Spain was a certain type of concert with certain type of authors, and the aesthetic was also very clear. And suddenly for me, Cologne was really special because I got to know really different directions that new music can be, different formats, and kind of a very, let's say, this kind of, exactly, different colors, different spaces, where sharing the scene very peacefully, let's say. And Spain was much restrictive, and I would hear very often this word of, no, but this is not new music, this is not. And this remained, and it was for me really a problem in that time, 2016, 2017. Now I see Spain a bit better, a bit more open, there's a little bit more new music. The thing that also is very different is that Spain has these kind of huge institutions, like huge opera houses and concert halls and so on, happening in the big cities, but there's no freie Szene. There's really very little space for ensembles and not a lot of small venues. There's not a lot of possibility to get funding, like open funding. And this, of course, it's a bit sad, because there are these, as I said, these huge opera productions that are wonderful, but not something like Litvelk, no? Like doing a new music festival in a 300 inhabitants town would not be best possible in Spain. At least it would really have to, it would really break a lot of borders, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I really hope this changes. Mm-hmm. As I said, I feel there's also already a change starting. Let's see.
Cool.
Yes, yes.
Sounds great. Yeah, we already talked about your strong connection to singing. How is it then writing for voice? Is it then also very natural, very easy? Because I also know composers, I mean, I know so many composers who like writing for voice, obviously. I'm a singer, I can sing the stuff, but I also know a few composers, they say, I don't write for voice at all because I have so many cliches and I don't know what they have in their head and they find it really difficult. Mm. Or do you have an, I mean, for you it's, I assume it's maybe easy, but what could we tell those composers who are a little frightened of writing for voice?
Wow. I mean, for me it's really organic. To write for voice, as I really sing a lot. And I also try to write for, like, for me, one kind of golden rule is that I sing, and I sing kind of as a non-professional, I am a hobby singer, let's say, and I'm very happy for that. So I don't want also to write for voice so that I sing the pieces. And by saying this, I mean, when I write for voice, I use my voice a lot when composing, but I also take some distance, you know, because it's not going to be my instrument performing that, but another wonderful instrument. And at the end, I always try to push the borders or to find new ways of expressing through the voice because of that. And it might be scary for composers, it could be, but... Well, I don't know. For me, there are also instruments that feel scary, you know? Like that I maybe, I don't know. I think I've never written a piece for harp, for okay. example. So it feels like everything unknown. And when the time comes writing for harp, I know I'm going to have to, of course, spend a lot of time, I don't know, on it.
But it is a very complicated instrument.
Exactly.
I had talks with Silke Eichhorn on that, and we also made, but it's in German. A very interesting, a very deep dive episode on my other channel, the Patreon one, where she really explained the harp. And I when she explained it, I was like, oh my god, I have such an easy instrument, because with all the pedals, I mean,
yeah, yeah.
She says you think you're whatever playing a third, but it's a fourth, and it's all like, I mean, it's really weird in your brain. And also she says if you mix up a pedaling, it's so hard to fix it, because you would have to go whatever four pedaling backwards to fix it.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
all that. And I'm like, this is crazy what those harpists do all the time.
Completely. But I mean, with the voice it's the same, right? Like it has a lot of like special things that you have to know. Also knowing, I don't know, something like, for example, regarding the duration of a piece, like, mm-hmm. Because I also care a lot of my singers, mm-hmm. like the singers singing my music, like really, really special things, right? Mm-hmm. And but don't be scared, just mm-hmm. face it, you know, learn, like experience that writing for voice is amazing. And I hope soon the opportunity for me comes to write for harp.
Yes, it will, I'm sure, yes. I'm sure. And yeah, you're working a lot as a composer, and how do you structure your day? Do you have any way of, I don't know, time management? Are you very structured and focused, or are you more like free-floating? How do you get all the things done you do when you're composing?
I've never been a person that follows like kind of strict plans, but I've always been good with discipline. So I know there's like certain things for me important to do every day, and I never follow a structure of like on the morning I do this and in the afternoon I do this, but I do focus on, you know, doing my reading, listening to music every day, and having some time doing some kind of sport or meditation or something like that. That's for me really important. And I have to say, normally, even in like phases where I do have to compose a lot, normally I don't compose more that 4 or 5 hours straight. I mean, sometimes if I have like some, I don't know, if I have to do parts or layout or something, this I can do longer. But as I said, like when I'm, for me, purely composing, thinking on the music, there's a moment where my brain just like gets too tired. And I know sometimes I have the will of continuing composing, and maybe I do, but at some point it's just bad music what I write after the fifth hour, let's say. Like it has to always kind of be fresh. And as I said, I don't follow like a strict routine, but this kind of practice of like listening to music a lot and reading, and you know, having the feeling that you do output but you also get some input is for me like really important. Yes, and I mean, it's fun.
So you don't have a certain time you like composing most, you can do it at any time of the day.
The thing is that I think normally I'm better on the morning, but this is not always possible. And I think if I keep too much thinking on these ideas, then I won't work, you know? Like, exactly. And I think also, you know, I am very affected by the seasons and the light and, you know, the other things that happen in life. And I don't know, today I took the train at 12 to come visit you here. So if I would be so strict that I only compose in the morning, then the composing time would be very short today, you know? Like, you have to just adapt to a lot of things because, of course, I also have to do other things than composing. And it's also itself such a rich task, right? Like, composing has a lot of phases. So I think I go with the flow of that phases, let's say.
Cool. And when you compose, are you usually focused like on one piece, or can you also switch between pieces, or what is good for you?
I had to learn how to switch, because basically on the last years I've combined doing very long pieces like music theater and operas that need a lot of time with writing smaller stuff. At the beginning I thought this would be a nightmare, but I've discovered this is really nice because switching gives some distance, and sometimes when you compose you are too into it sometimes that it's nice to suddenly see it from another point of view. And also it was not a decision to start writing opera, it kind of happened, but these processes are really scary when you are like, I don't know, 3 years writing a piece in a moment that you also change a lot, I guess, you know? So it's been really, really refreshing to sometimes work parallelly in different pieces.
Cool.
I have to say, yes.
And who or what has played the greatest role in shaping you and what inspires you?
Oh, wow. I mean, a lot of people. Like, let's say, I've studied with 4 teachers in my life that, like, every of them, like, did something to me, let's say, to my process. My 2 German teachers were really different and are both, for me, very important, shaping my personality as a composer, and are Markus Heschler and Michael Beil, like, really opposite. But also I want to mention Irene Galindo Quero, yes, a very special composer that was my teacher for a couple of years in Spain.
Oh, amazing.
And she was very important for me because she was teaching a very small subject that we had on our bachelor's called Music and Audiovisual Media, let's say, something like that. Really, really small subject, let's say, in the study plan of my bachelor's. But she was the first female composer that I met and was close to me. And she was also the person who, like, one of the persons who introduced me to Germany. And she was also the one that first said, Cologne would be a nice place for you. And, I mean, now we are friends and we keep in touch, of course. In a different way, but she was really, really decisive, I think, for me. And in terms of like non-academic situation, for me it's really important everything that I read. I try to go to exhibitions. I love going to the cinema, and to have this present is like really important. And actually at some point I even decided to write that on my bio, like in my website. In my bio, I have at the end a small paragraph mentioning really important authors for me, like Goran Petrovic or Dubravko Gresic or the films from Jack Tati. These are, for me, like, it shaped my thinking, you know? So that's also important to, I don't know, to keep the inspiration fresh, let's say.
Wow, it's great that you get it from everywhere and you already have also some favorites. And what does success mean for you?
Oh, success. I don't know. It's a difficult word. I don't know if I like the word success a lot, to be honest. I think a success is to keep being curious about music and about composing. And I think this is the most important thing for me. Like, that would be my success, you know? Because of course things get a bit complicated when you stop studying and you have to, you know, you get these all these kind of adult responsibilities, and suddenly you say, okay, I really want to be a composer, so I need to, you know, to get commissions and to write pieces so I also can earn money and pay my rent and all of this stuff. And you know, this, of course, it's like really complicated because that's a business also, and it has to be like it has this aspect. But I think this can also kill the curiosity very easily, and this is something that I pay a lot of attention into it. So yeah, that's a success. Being curious. I don't know what you think, but it's a difficult topic.
I'm also such a curious person, so I totally resonate with you. But I also think it's always, and that's also a question I like to ask, it's always then exciting, or how do you stay true to yourself within, as you say, this music business and all the things that are going on. And also there, everybody has whatever their own strategy, and I also find this is a process also. How do I keep true to myself? And maybe today I think something different than, I don't know, 3 months ago. And because I think we experience ourselves, or we go deeper in certain experiences, and like, okay, now this is whatever it is now. And I think in the younger ages, I also thought I whatever should have success, like in this kind of more superficial meaning. And now I realize that everything is a success. I mean, also just being alive is a success. I mean, I'm here with this body and experiencing great things, or meeting great people like you. This is a success. And so now it's more for me, I think, like this overall thing. And I'm not just, and it's also has freed me a lot to not be fixated on this common sense success thing.
Completely. I mean, I think it's a bit complicated because we shouldn't, I don't want to, you know, to transmit this idea that so romantic that I only do this for the curiosity and so on. And of course, I think of success and I think of my career because that's also a reality, right? And but like for me, it's very interesting when I've been too focused on career and I've taken decisions following that. Normally, it doesn't work. It works when I don't know, when you do what you're, when you follow your skin, like when you follow your intuition, and then suddenly something that you didn't plan to be so meaningful for your career, it happens that it is. You know, it's really interesting. So I don't know. Sometimes I think it's just good to let go of stuff and, you know.
For me, that was also something I learned during my life. And I don't know if it's part of aging or whatever, being a woman. I don't know, because it's really this kind of embracing things and letting go. And since I do that, things are so much easier. And for some reason, it looks then like they're just coming to me. And I have the feeling I actually do less, and it's so much more fun.
Completely. Yes.
And is there anything that drives you forward, or do you have a vision for something, or what's keeping you going?
I mean, I really feel I have a huge privilege now in my life, just for being able to write music, and to that this kind of became my profession and that I can be focused on that. And to be honest, I just only wish that it continues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that's for me like super important. It's like a treasure that I keep safe, and I just wish it still happens, because mm-hmm. you don't know when this can stop. And this is what drives me, like to keep being able to write, to discover I don't know, new formats, to discover also new performers. This is for me like so important.
Mm-hmm.
And like I have, for example, I have kind of small little dreams of pieces that I would like to write, you know, but it's not that I search for them so much. Like I know it's this I would really like. I would really like to write a piece for orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I've never heard the piece of orchestra by me performed, so these kind of little mm-hmm. things. But you know, it's gonna come, maybe, and mm-hmm. maybe not. So just being able to compose would mm-hmm. be amazing, to keep composing.
Yeah, it's so great to talk to you and that you're here sitting close to me. And my last question for you today is, which tip would you like to give the younger artists?
I guess the same that I tell to me, just keep being curious, keep searching for your voice and searching for a space also for that voice to be heard. And I would say also, it's like a bit mainstream, but also don't give up,
mm-hmm.
because there are times that you only receive no and times where you get a yes, and you know, just keep trying it, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah, it's very important to, you know, not let down because of rejection you might get in this area. It sometimes happens. And
also
keep going, this endurance thing. Yeah. Well, thank you so much that you're here. Thank you so much for the talk. And
it was wonderful. Thank you, Irene.
This was the interview from today. I hope that it inspired you. And please send me your emails, send me your feedback, because I love to interact with you. Thank you very much that you tuned in with me today. I really, really hope that you liked it. And please tell your friends and colleagues about this podcast. I thank you very much. I wish you all the best. Live your music, live your life, and see you next time. Yours, Irene.